So, before we get rolling any further, let's come together in the silence. Those of you who weren't here, I always like to spend time. I think one of the reasons that Alcoholics Anonymous is so powerful is that it utilizes God's two languages, silence and laughter. And we've spent a little time laughing, so let's spend a little 3 minutes in silence here, and we'll go from there. Okay. So, and if you're if you don't have a meditative practice, and you're thinking, "Oh, this I can't do this because my mind's too busy," remember that our friends the Buddhists call it the beginner's mind is the drunken monkey mind. So let's see, and if you know, just sitting with your eyes closed or your eyes open thinking is absolutely perfect as a beginner. So thank you. The spiritual experience is not something that is of the mind. Although it is something that can be taught and can be caught. And here in Alcoholics Anonymous, many times the way we catch it and get infected by it is through our ears, listening and identifying to people. There was a man by the name of William James who wrote a book called The Varieties of Religious Experience. And the book, The Varieties of Religious Experience, was exactly about that, different types of religious experiences that different people had. And at that time, the book's actually a set of lectures. And they were given in Scotland, Ricky. So, yeah, okay, so another contribution. The Gifford lectures at Edinburgh University. And this set of talks was read by just about everybody that was in a helping profession in the beginning of the last century. And so it was something that a lot of people knew about. And in the book, James comes up with a thing that there are two types of spiritual or religious experiences. If he wrote the book today, he'd call it The Varieties of Spiritual Experience, because he talks about all different types of experience. And he said that there's the sudden one, where it just appears to be an intrusion where somebody gets hit. And then there's the educational type. Now, the reason that the sudden experience seems to be important, more important than the educational variety is because you can tell the story in a couple minutes. That's it. The result is exactly the same. One of the names that they were going to call Alcoholics Anonymous at one point before they came up with the name was the Jamesian Society. And the reason was that in the book of James, the line is, "Don't tell me about your faith. Show me by your fruits." And it's the fruits in the varieties of religious experience. James' thing was, the reason that we know that this is not just supernatural weirdness or mental illness is the fruits of the experience. What happened from it? And if you go back and look at all the different people that are having all these different experiences, that's kind of what, where you can see how things work. We happen to be heirs of a particularly sudden spiritual experience, the one that Bill Wilson had in Towns Hospital. And this is another the book Varieties of Religious Experience, Ebby T., the guy who brought the message to Bill, the drunk that Bill had drank with, that he knew that this guy was actually worse than he was, and he's not drinking anymore. When Bill has his experience, Ebby goes back to his Oxford group buddies and goes, "My pigeon just got all lit up." Now, he didn't tell Bill that his experience wasn't valid. But he runs back and talks to his sponsors, and they say, "Take this book to Bill and have him read it." Now, the book is, they say it's a tough read, and it is if you start at the beginning. But if you go to where Bill went It's lecture 9. It's conversion. And, you know, I'm going to start using some words that sound religious. And just, you know, just don't worry about it. I'm not. But conversion, and all conversion is the experience of getting sober. It's there was living one way, and now there's another. And what happened in that? You know, I mean, I was doomed to drink, and then I went. There's the sound effects again. I would love it. I'm doomed to drink, and then I go to an AA meeting, and I never pick up again. What happened? What happened? Well, for me, it was the start of an experience of the educational variety. I learned about this thing, and I trusted the people that I was listening to because they drank the way I drank. And they weren't doing it anymore. And they'd gotten in the trouble that I'd gotten in, and they weren't doing it anymore. And so I believed, and I followed their lead. This educational variety experience, and Wilson talks about it in this Spear X talk that's on XA speakers. I put the website up here in case you haven't said it, xa-speakers.org, if you're listening at home. And this Spear X, and in it he says that there is no difference. He agrees his experience is exactly the same as William James. He says, you know, you'll sit there in a meeting and a guy will say, well, I think this program's really great. And, you know, he's taken a cake for a year. His wife gives it to him. He gets up in front of the microphone. He says, I haven't beaten my children, I got my job back, my wife likes me, my neighbors aren't afraid when I come home, but I don't get the spiritual angle. There is nothing more spiritual than that. It's exactly the same. There is no difference. And so this is why in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we all have our different experiences. Now I come in and I have my experience of the educational variety. For those of you who I work the steps, I do my 4-step when I'm 24 days sober. At 28 days, I'm starting to sponsor people. A little over 100 days, the obsession to drink goes away, which I never thought would happen. I never thought would happen. I'm making amends. I got a job. And somewhere in the middle of October of 1979, I'm sitting in a room very much like this. I was at the 2+2 meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had four 15-minute speakers at the meeting. And it was at the Westwood Community Church. And I'm listening to a woman by the name of Liz Lopresti talk. And Liz is talking about how drinking alcohol took everything from her that makes a human being, and how she became an animal. And all of a sudden, the room left. And there was nothing but white. And my mind said, maybe this is an LSD flashback. But my heart, my being, my essence said, pay attention. Pay very, very close attention. And so I did. And what I experienced is in classical language, they talk about the three O's: omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence. I knew to the core of my being that all is known. I knew to the core of my being that all is love. And I knew to the core of my being that absolutely everything is perfection. And in that, a guy like me, I have to ask a question. So I say, you know, what about war? And there was a feeling. There was no actual words that came to me, but the feeling was, don't worry. I got it. And I sat there, and I started to almost phrase another question a couple minutes later. And then it was even more powerful. It was like it was just, don't worry, I got it. And I was able to just sit there after that. Now, I don't know if it was 8 minutes or 10 minutes or 12 minutes, or speaker's only 15 minutes. So it wasn't that much, you know, it wasn't that long. And as I started to come back into the room, it's really cool because behind the pulpit at this church, there are three stained glass windows. God is love. And that was the first thing that came into my vision. And then gradually the room came in. And then I started to look around. And it was very apparent to me that nobody else had been on the bus I was on. And I looked around, and I didn't know what to do. So I helped put away the chairs, and I went home. I didn't have a community that I could speak about that to. The next day at the noon meeting, I said something about it, and a guy threw a chair. A, in those days, was a little more rowdy. And a guy literally grabbed the chair and started coming after me. Grabbed me. You liar. And so I was just quiet about it. A couple weeks later, I was having a cup of coffee with an old-timer. He said, yeah, kid, that stuff happens around here frequently. But we don't talk about it because we don't want to scare the new person away. I know from my being around a bit that in a room of this size, there's at least three people that have had this type of experience. And they may not be talking about it at all, and you don't need to talk about it, but I just want you to know, me too. I didn't talk about it for 20 years. I went and I found my old parish priest, and I told him what happened. And he had read James's book, and he'd had two parishioners that had had that experience. And he said to me, Jamie, I would give everything in my life to have that happen. He said, but it's not my story. But he said, that's the real, don't worry about it. You don't have to think about it. And over the years, what's happened is that I've, you know, studied this stuff and all that, but another thing that I got in that awareness was, don't try and chase this thing and don't use it. And I didn't start talking about this from podiums. I still don't. I don't think I tell this story two times a year, maybe three. Um, because there's some people get afraid of a separation when there is none at all. There is no difference between the gift that I have and the gift that any person in this room or any sober alcoholic or abstinent or woman or man has. Our gift is exactly the same. We're not drinking. We're not using. We're not acting out in whatever way that you've been driven to a program from. The only difference between me with 35 years and a guy with 35 minutes is that my heart's been consecutively open that long, and there is something wondrous that happens. My teacher said to me, 5 years from now, it will not matter who you slept with, what kind of car you drive, what kind of job you have today. The only thing that will matter is, did you spend time in the silence? And I've been able to keep my heart open consecutively. That's the only difference. There is none other. The gift is the same, and the fruits are exactly the same. And there's many people that are much better AA members than I am that haven't had this particular experience. But I want you to know that what it was that Bill had is not remarkable. That it happens all the time. And it's happening more now than it did in the 30s. And one of the reasons is that we now have the ability to listen to teachers and to pick up their vibration electronically. We can actually hear the words that they say. It doesn't have to be interpreted through others. We don't have to go up to get the message. We can get it directly from the consciousness of the person that's expressing it. And this is the joy of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because we all get the turn to stand up and talk. And each and every person in this room, there is one person whom you are designed to save. They will be sitting in the room, and when you speak, it will speak to their heart. And all you have to do is be willing. All you have to do is that single spiritual thing. Say yes. Say yes. Alcoholics Anonymous is not rocket science. It's for drunks. It's for people that just, I mean, we're about that deep, you know? And we try and put all this baggage on the program and all this stuff, and it's not that big a deal, you know? You admit you can't do something. I can't drink anymore at all. I'm tapped. In the book, Varieties of Religious Experience, and this was the thing that when Bill was reading this book, the part on conversion, the common denominator is what they call deflation of ego at depth, and you see it all throughout AA literature. It comes from James's book. And this thing that I have been crushed, and I have to call out and ask for help. Now, I didn't call out and ask for help when I had my experience. Bill did. In the book Varieties of Religious Experience, there are a number of, in chapter 9, there's a number of examples that are given, people's personal stories about what happened with them. One of which is an alcoholic by the name of S.H. Hadley. Hadley is a bad drunk, and he's on the streets in New York. And he gets to the point where he's dying, and he ends up in a mission. And he gets down on his knees, and he asks Jesus to save him. And there's the description of a white light experience that is absolutely mirrors what Bill talks about. I don't think there's a wind in it. But I mean, it's the same stuff. So Bill's reading this thing, boom, there it is. Now, a fun thing is, why was it that Ebbie was given that book? Because the mission that he's living in is being run by S.H. Hadley's son, who was a bad drunk who got sober in the Oxford groups. He's the guy who's running the place. You know, it's not like, oh, have him read this philosophical tome. It's no, this guy's dad's in this story. He's a bad drunk. Read it. And so there's Hadley. Hadley says, Jesus, will you help me? And he has this experience, right? Now, what would have happened if Bill, who was at a mission 2 weeks before he got sober in towns, and he has his experience. Bill always reports that what he said is, if there be a God, will he show himself to me? What if he'd have said, Jesus, help me, instead? Would AA ever have existed? This is just a little fun thing to chew about. Where would we be? So, you know, this idea of the great thing that we have here is this idea that it doesn't matter what we call it. And, you know, whatever it is, I don't think it really cares what syllables I hang on it. It's, am I doing whatever it is that I can to get in line with it? And what is that? It's practical and it's transferable, which is you give up, you ask for help without reservation, you say at some level, I'll do whatever I got to do, please help me. You make a list of what it is that you've done that you can't stand yourself for, and who you hate. And with the guidance of somebody that's done it, you go out and you repair that. And then on a daily basis, as you go through that, we open up more and more to whatever it is, and we start to learn to follow the breeze of the Spirit. And so that when we walk down the street, what happens is, although I'm in Sweden, but, you know, maybe your eyes meet with somebody and something happens. Or you go to the meeting and you show up 10 minutes early. How do you know I've turned my will and my life over to God? Go to the meeting 10 minutes early. Remember, it's not the spiritual truths. It's not guys like me foaming from the podium. I don't remember any of those people. I remember a couple little stories one way or another from those first few weeks, but I can tell you every person that was kind to me. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not rocket science. You know, going to the meeting a couple minutes early, standing outside, a guy comes in.
What do you say to him? I'm Swedish. You can't talk. I don't want to invade his space. I'm being respectful.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what you do at funerals, don't you? You pay your respects. But just saying to somebody, this is what I do. I when I go up to new guys or new gals, because I'm safe now. You know, you don't run across girls who have problems with grandfather figures. But I just walk up and I say hi. I regularly come to this meeting. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you before. Are you new? I never say, are you new? Say, I've never met you here before. Do you have a chair? Coffee's over there. And then just, you know, how you doing? And then you wait. It's not difficult. Those are the people.
People have never asked me to sponsor them.
Go be nice to people. It's incredible what'll happen. Now, I was brought into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was brought into an Alcoholics Anonymous where, the sponsors were hard-hearted and they didn't care about your feelings. And I was taught by my friend Eric B. He said, Jay, if you have the privilege of talking to a new person, you get to tell your wife you're going to be busy this week, period. And you take them every night for a week to the best group you know that's going that night. And you introduce them to everybody that you know. And then after a week, let them set their own course. But you have exposed them to the very best AA you know of. And so, you know, there are certain meetings that people only see me at when I got a new person. But I know that they're great groups. It may not be a group that I go to. But I want this person to be exposed to the very best of Alcoholics Anonymous that I know of. And this is the way that this message is transmitted. Now, later on, we can get into the work in the steps and all that stuff. But it's, again, this is not difficult stuff. Don't be seduced by the technicians, you know?
Well, if you don't know why there's a comma at the end of the third paragraph,
I've read over 500 of Bill Wilson's letters. He never once mentions a page or anything about the big book. In one letter he says, or in a couple letters he says, when we wrote We Know Only a Little, he said we were much wiser than we knew. And in another one, he's talking to an atheist that the police were called on. And he said, you know, you might have a little part in this. You might want to do an inventory.
But he doesn't say, go to chapter 5, and after you've got done doing a real third step.
You know, I mean, let's go back to Dr. Bob, right? What would you do if you're sitting around at a sponsee's house? You know that you've given him a beer and a goofball that morning. He shows up at 9 o'clock and he tells you that he has finished his amends.
Well, I don't know if that counts. You weren't sober.
What if Bill would have said that? Would we be here? Now, I am not recommending that you give a sponsee a bottle of beer and a goofball. This is recorded, so I want to make sure that that's clear. Because you get misquoted, it's really fun what happens, you know. But, you know, I mean, just so the thing is that we let God guide us. Bill says in some of his writings that God starts to draw us. He spoke about in the spiritual. I'm going to read you a couple of things about spiritual experience. One from Bill. He was writing this to a Jesuit, John, wherever you are, John. He was talking, summing it up, I can say that my experience caused me instantaneously to believe and to know that God is my Father. that his grace is available to me, that life goes on beyond the grave. That in his house there are many mansions. These are things I think I know. All the rest are in the nature of speculations, which are subject to change, or more evidence, or better insight. But even with this, I have no certainty. I simply believe that God is all, that he is very good to everyone, even the very worst of us. As I've read more and more of his word, his letters, the many mansions that he's referring to is different. He doesn't call it reincarnation, but he calls it different experiences in being. There's a book that's just come out, very interesting book, called The Proof of Heaven. It's by a guy by the name of Eben Alexander. And I'm reading this book, and I think you could get an idea of why I got lit up about it. He's talking about an experience he had. He got this E. coli virus in his head, and the whole outside of his brain turned to jelly. And he's a neuroscientist. And he goes through this experience. And this is his description of his experience. He said, "My experience showed me that the death of the body and the brain are not the end of consciousness. That human experience continues beyond the grave. More important, it continues under the gaze of a God who loves and cares about each one of us and about where the universe itself and all the beings within it are ultimately going." One of the fruits of not being seduced by material culture for me, and again, this is just my weirdness. You guys asked me to talk. I'm giving you my talk. So this is, but I don't watch television. I don't listen to the radio. I get some stuff through the internet, but not a lot. I quit reading the newspaper because I've learned to pay attention to what is in front of me in life. This is what God's will is for me, not thinking about something outside of what is in my consciousness. And for those of you who weren't here, that doesn't mean that I haven't gone all over and worked with different kinds of people in different countries and helped out in all kinds of different stuff. But I am not concerned with anything except what is presented in front of me on a moment-by-moment basis. We can get into all kinds of intellectual discussions about, well, what about this and what about that? But these are not about our direct experience. And these are the conversations that I have with people. What is going on with you? Not what do you think. What has happened to you? When I have the privilege of talking to anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm just meeting, I always ask them, what's your favorite thing about sobriety? And it's so much fun to hear what it is that they have to say. When there are people that aren't in AA, I say, what's the most lovely thing that's happened to you since I saw you last? Or this day? Or this week? And they're stunned. Because most people want to have a conversation about something that they've been told to think about. And in my country, we get it 24/7. About who we're supposed to be afraid of and what we're supposed to be afraid of. So I want to give you one more kind of fun practice and then love to do some Q&A if there's anybody that wants to do that stuff. It's my favorite favorite thing. I like to say that I'm sober so long that it's intellectually indefensible. I mean, you know, 35 years, why? I mean, come on. I mean, can't you just, like, go do something that's really rewarding or fun or enjoyable? And but for the past, probably since Greg started being my sponsor when I was 8 years sober, every year, I say to myself, if you could do anything, what would you do? What would you do? See, each and every woman and man in this room, when you were young, there were things that you dreamed of, and before your alcoholism and self-centeredness got in the way, and maybe different experiences that you had in your life crushed out your creativity and your belief in yourself, you had some stuff that really fired you up. All those things can come true. Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, like, you have to understand that, AA has only been in your country maybe 50 years. 1,000 years from now, 500 years from now, 250 years from now, they're going to look at, back at the groups that you were involved in, and they're going to talk about the pioneers of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're talking about you. And we have been given something that is absolutely incomprehensible to the founders of this movement. I mean, in 1948, man, it was put the plug in the jug, everything's fine. Go grab a drunk. And that's what they did. This doing step and book work is like really a new phenomenon. This joyous Alcoholics Anonymous that grows exponentially is something that's very, very new, and you guys are all involved in that stuff. And we now know that you don't have to be sitting in a meeting every day worrying about who's going to get drunk next, because that's what happened in the beginning. In the 50s and 60s, people started to like be able to start expanding their lives. Now we know you can get sober and you can go to medical school and you can stay sober and do that. You can have children and be a really good mother. And go down one on a little bit. Anybody who has kids, go to Al-Anon. It's really helpful. Just my opinion. It should be yours. But it doesn't matter what your dreams are. You can go and pick up a paintbrush, and you haven't picked up a paintbrush in 35 years, and you can start to paint. You know how to be sponsored. You can go to school. You can go to anybody. You can know somebody in your group who throws clay, and you can go up and say, I'd really like to do that. Will you help me, please? You know how to ask for help. You know how to follow direction, and you know how to continually open your heart. And in the doing of that, we find out where the breeze of the Spirit wants us to be. And we get to make all kinds of mistakes and screw up and have, you know, another wife and another business and another job and all the things that happen in human time and humankind. But we get to not be confined by three dimensions. So just a couple of examples. And this has got nothing to do with me. It just is what my dreams have been. 12 years ago, I really wanted to help people learn to meditate. Really wanted to do that. And I didn't want to become a professional God person because I didn't feel that that was... Actually, I talked to it with one of my mentors, and he said, Jay, he said, you have more spiritual conversations with people in a week than I do in a month and a half, and I'm a rector of a really big church. He says, stay with what you're doing. But I got together with my spiritual mentor, and we created a website, and it's the number 3, minutesofsilence.org. And on it, there's a wheel with a dozen different ways to meditate. And 3 of them we've done this weekend. And you can just click on it, and you can learn from my friend Dulcie. You can listen to her. The infinity sign is where the... it's at the 3 o'clock position. And you can learn to do the awareness exercise. The most spiritual guy I know, he said he did that for 90 days and his life has never been the same. My experience is very similar, but that's my teacher talking. And we made it so that anybody can grab at it. There's stuff about, I had one of the, and this is what's fun about it. Okay? Last night I'm at dinner and a young woman turns around to me and she said she'd just been on a Zen retreat. And at the Zen retreat, they were doing hour and a half sits, and then they'd get up and they'd go do this walking meditation. She said, oh, this walking meditation's really cool. So I had her go to the website, the 3minutesofsilence.org. There's a labyrinth on it. You click on the labyrinth, and there's a way to find a labyrinth anywhere in the world that you are that they've got them. And we found the one in Stockholm. So now she knows where she can go to this park and do a walking meditation anytime that she likes. How cool is that? It's got nothing to do with me. But it is fun to watch people get the information. And so this is a fun thing to do for me. This is my dream. And there's this thing where we get together once a year for 3 minutes, and people all over the world meditate together. And it's been picked up by all kinds of different people that teach meditation to kids, and because there isn't any way to do it that's right. It's just different ways to do it. Pray and meditate the way you drank and used. See where you end up. You know, that for me was really, really, you know, a wonderful thing. Another thing, I've been sober a long time. I've been sponsoring people for 35 years now. One of the things that just breaks my heart is the fact that somebody comes into recovery and their partner doesn't join them. And trying to get the family member into Al-Anon, it's really weird. You ever notice with an alcoholic or an addict, they come in and they, you know,
you got to go to meetings. You got to do it until you learn to like it.
I don't like it. I don't identify. They're not nice. I don't understand. I'm just not like them. We don't care. You keep telling them they got to go, right? You send a family member to Al-Anon, they come back and you go, oh, I don't like it. The meetings are awful. Those people don't understand me. And we actually let them off the hook. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And the other thing was that people that were in program, there's
one person that will be the very sober and active, and the other person that's not quite as sober. Or I've got this spiritual practice and they've got this spiritual practice, but they're not on the same page.
And it just broke my heart to see this year after year. And so I wrote a book with my wife called Loving Sober. And you can go on lovingsober.com and you can download it for free the PDF. And it's a field guide to spiritual intimacy. And we did a little bit, my friend Lisa and I, we did a little bit of that yesterday. Showed part of it. But it's a way of creating a spiritually intimate relationship, which is something that I never knew. But I learned. And so I got to share it with others for fun and for free. Now, these are my dreams. And in both of these sites, like, lots of people have found some degree of comfort with it. I don't know what your dream is. But if you stay with this way of life, it's not just about not drinking. You are the message. You are. Your life is. And there is no limit upon it. As long as you do the things that it is that we've done in order to clean it out so that you can let the breeze come. It's a very old story, but the latest version of it is of Mother Teresa. And she said there are three stages of prayer. The first one is, help me. Which we in the fellowships all know so well. The second stage is, give me. Because if I get this, I'll be okay. But the final level is, use me. And may you each be used in the way that whatever is designed you to be of use here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. I was told I could play after 7 o'clock if I wanted. If anybody wants to ask a question or anything, I'm good for it. Yeah, Freddie? Freddie said, dude, you talk a lot about the fourth dimension. How do you get there, especially when you're in a big city? Well, the most important thing is to get a daily practice of meditation. That's the single most important thing. And for those of you who weren't here, meditation is part of a step. It's not optional. I mean, you can pretend. But, you know, like I like to say, I'm not good at the not drinking part either. So the first thing is meditative practice. Getting it. And it's never too early to start, and it's never too late to begin. So that's the first thing. The second is to start paying attention to your life. A really fun thing that my wife and I have done recently is we did the Artist's Way. Has anybody heard of the Artist's Way by Julia Cameron? You know, you can download it for like $9.
What's that got to do with not drinking?
Well, it's learning to open my heart and mind. And this woman is in recovery. And it's a whole thing about getting in touch with your inner artist. Now, we did it I really think if you're in a relationship or you've got some sponsees that you have fun with or stuff, it's a really great thing because it's a guided daily practice for 12 weeks. And there's all kinds of fun stuff. There's nothing in it that says you have to have a little red wine and smoke gauwaz in order to be an artist, but it does teach you how to start to pay attention in a way that's maybe a little different. And within this, one of the instructions is search your experience out for synchronicity. How do you say that in Swedish? Okay. Synchronicity? Yeah. So that. So each and every one of us, there's a great book called The Fingerprints of God by, I think it's Barbara Haggerty or Harrison or something. But this, The Fingerprints of God, and it says that, you know how when we get sober, we're all walking around and we start to see these coincidences? And then we start to go to sleep to them. And this artist way says, make sure every day that you're looking for the synchronicity and write it down. It's a really good way to pay attention to the fact that you're not running the show, that spirit is evolving and working through and with you. And it's a marvelous, marvelous thing. So look for synchronicity. Meditate. Always answer the phone. Now, each and every one of us, we've got one behavior that is a challenge to us. Okay? So take a piece of it. Maybe it's one website. Maybe it's one food. I'm not telling you to quit all the chocolate, just one chocolate. One type of chocolate. Maybe it's, you know, some other thing that gets in the way. The Oxford group was very interesting. They kept, one of the things they always tried to get Frank to do was to define sin. And Frank said, you can't. Because with every person it's different. And those of us who work with others, we know that what may be a sin for one person is not a sin for another. But they defined it as anything that, and by the way, the word sin is a medieval term, and it's the sound that an arrow makes when it misses the target. It goes, "Sss." That's what the term comes from. It's not, you know, you did something, you stepped on Jesus' toe, and you're going to fry. That's not what it is. It's you missed the target. "Sss." And so the idea is that each of us have that thing or these things that keep us from being useful to whatever the power is, but more importantly, useful to our fellows. And so if I'm spending all my time on the computer or playing video games, or I just need to go home and eat a little something instead of going out after the meeting or being to the meeting a few minutes early, maybe that's what you do. Remember, spiritual growth is incremental, one little piece at a time. So in doing that, what happens is awareness grows, and you get friends, and you make an experiment. You know, all that I was talking about this weekend, all this weird stuff that I've been talking about is experimental. It doesn't matter what you agree with or think about what I'm saying. Try it and see what happens. And have somebody that you're reporting it to. Because it's wild. You know, I mean, the reason that I got all these stories is I've been paying attention for all these years. You know? I mean, I didn't know that that was the night my daughter was conceived until I looked back. And I realized that it was the night that I said that prayer. So pay attention. And the other thing is that I go to 3 meetings a week. I go to 3 conventions a year that I don't talk at. I go to 2 retreats a year that I don't talk at. And over 35 years, I pick some stuff up. And I use it. I try it. Not what I think about it. I try the stuff. And the stuff that feels that works in my particular school toolkit, I use. And then, you know, 5 years later, I completely forgot that I did that, and it was really cool, and it helped me a lot. And I've picked, because I've picked something else up along the way. And don't believe material culture. You are the fullness of God incarnate. And by God, I mean whatever is. I'm not talking about what it is you might be. You are the perfection. Absolute. And if you lose 15 pounds, if you get another 10,000 crowns in the bank account, if you get whatever, if you get him, if you get her, if you get pregnant, if you don't, the mind will just take it and move it again and say, this is why it is that you aren't absolute and perfect in this moment. And the fourth dimension is the realization of the perfection of the moment. Yes, John.
Did you get to the mesquite bird when you were waiting for your parents?
I'm sorry?
The
mesquite
bird?
Oh, yeah, I got to the worm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I am very, I'm dedicated especially to eradicating bloated insects. Yeah. That was about the mescal worm. Yes. Yes. So the question was about restitution, racism. How do you do that? In 1982, I'm about 3 years sober. I'm working at a place, the Marriott Hotel, called Gammons. And this was a business hotel that at 8:30 at night went from a business hotel to a very, very vibrant African-American discotheque. And I was maybe the... There were maybe seven or eight of us that were the servers, that we were the only Caucasians in the room. And being around drunks tends to color one's opinion of people. And I found after about 5 months that I had become almost viscerally reactive to people of color. And that's not how I was raised. It had nothing to do with my consciousness, had nothing to do with my friendship, but I found that it was environmental. And the minute I saw it, you know, like, what it was really great. What happened is that because I was sending out that vibe, that was the vibration that I had. Consciousness is experience. And the only way that I'm going to change my experience is by changing my consciousness. So I don't realize that this is happening, but fortunately I'm sober. I'm doing the things that you know we're talking about. I'm paying attention and all that stuff. So and what had happened is that if there was a black couple that was brought into a restaurant, they would be seated next to me. When I was sitting in the theater, the movie theater, suddenly there would be three or four of the couples around me. I'd never had anything about that. And so my vibration level, this is what my consciousness is out picturing. Once I had that awareness and I could see that I had a conscious separation from God, back to Chuck C's thing about that there is only one problem and there is only one solution. And in that problem is all problems, and in that solution is all solutions. And that problem is conscious separation from God. It's in a book called A New Pair of Glasses that was transcribed when Chuck C. gave a set of weekend talks. And so how do you do that? How do you deal with that? Now, it's embarrassing to even describe that this is something that happened with me. But once I saw it, once I became aware of it, I could see the lie in it, realize that this is nothing but an experience of me. It is a result of me putting myself in a position to be hurt. How am I doing that? I'm working in a bar. And I don't know about you guys, but it doesn't matter who's in the bar. They're going to be acting a little bit off. Maybe not treating me quite the way I think I should be treated. Especially around 10 o'clock at night. Doesn't matter what bar it is. But I go and hang a name on a group of people because I'm not even hanging a name on it. I'm vibrating at that level. Once I see it, I can realize the lie. I can step back, I can take responsibility, and then I can change my behavior, get another job, right? Or realize that this is not about them, this is only about me. Now, how do I make amends for that? I don't know about... this is what I did. I'm a member of Initiatives of Change. And the stated goal of Initiatives of Change is to heal the wounds of history by telling the truth about race and culture. Yeah. By the way, it's the modern name of the Oxford Group, and it's not a Christian movement, but it is a pantheistic I've been to all kinds of conferences on good governance in Africa. I've done work on with Somalis. I've done all, and it wasn't in making reparations for that. I did have to take responsibility for the fact that my parents' people were my father's people were slave owners, and so. And most of us in Western culture, our economic stuff came from that. And this is all the political stuff. I don't mean it to go down that at all. The thing is that I have been led to do things that I've had profound experiences in having people that I thought could give me nothing, give me everything. So, yeah.
I don't know if Chuck C. talks about it, but highest form of prayer is action.
Mm-hmm.
So many times when I have my morning and the night prayer, I come to a situation where to ask for something or even ask for guidance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It's absolutely. There.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm wondering if I'm resting too much.
Ah.
You understand?
Yeah, sure,
yeah. It should be harder to walk in the presence of God. Do you understand?
Right, yeah.
The ritual is not needed anymore.
Correct.
And that is sometimes have you experienced that?
Yeah. Oh, yes. So, I'm going to have a hard time formulating the question. I hear the statement, but so let me.
Is it discipline?
Oh, okay. Yes. What's the difference between spiritual discipline and awareness of the presence of God, as our friend Chuck described it, or as many of us? Yesterday I talked about that in our literature it says that we let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined. and that my understanding as time has gone by is that when I listen to the birds, when I hear the bell, when I feel the sunlight on my face, that is God disciplining me. That is God showing God whatever is its face to me. Every piece of synchronicity that I acknowledge, every time that I actually look someone in the eye, I see the smile, I smell the smell, I taste the taste. This is conscious awareness of the presence of God. Now, I only have that because of grace. And for me, the grace, the gateway to grace was the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. With the personality I got and the kind of guy I am, I've been involved with a lot of people, and all of them try to guide me away from Alcoholics Anonymous. Some they think it's a lower form of understanding or service or this or that, but I know that what we do here is we raise the dead. It's very simple. there are certain things that I need to do if I'm going to be a member of AA. For me, I need to go to 3 meetings a week. Now, I don't need to go to meetings to stay sober. But I go to meetings because, and I go to meetings regularly because if I don't, this is what happens in my mind. I start waiting for what it is that I agree with. When people are sharing, when I'm going to one meeting a week. Also, I don't know the new people. I don't recognize them, and they don't recognize me. And so I go to 3 meetings a week because it seems to be that when I do that, the material world just runs off my back. And I can be present to put my hand out to a new person, which for me is the ultimate service that I've been designed for. I can do all the other stuff, and I do. But it's the thing that keeps me centered in the action. Or as Chuck said, I just get up in the morning, I report for duty. Right? And so, you know, again, it's just a matter of consciousness as experience. And my mind will always tell me that there's something wrong with my spiritual practice. I mean, and I've done all kinds of stuff. You know, I've got one teacher that taught me, you know, the minute, an hour. It's great stuff. Great, great stuff. I've had another teacher tell me, you're full of crap unless you're meditating 4 hours a day. And I did that. In both of them, there was stuff that was telling me, well, you aren't doing this or you aren't doing that or all those things. So, sins of commission. If I'm going to make a mistake, I want it to be doing something, not doing it. So, yes, miss.
Yeah, my name is Johanna. I'm from Seven Day Group. I wanted to ask you guidance. How did it go? I mean, I was badly battered. I mean, 15 months ago, I had my neck in my skull. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure who did it. Somebody did it from the somebody knocked me down.
Yeah.
And I ended up in the hospital and all that. And I know as an alcoholic, you cannot hold on to, you cannot be carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for you to go and carry around anger. And so I would like to get some advice on how to let go or something.
Okay. So this woman has asked a question about how does one deal with tragic, justifiable resentments. Would that be about right? Okay. So there's a story. And everybody in this room has a story. It's a repetitive thing that we tell ourselves about what happened to us in a given situation. Example. My mother, Scott's, unrecovered Al-Anon, comes from generations of violence. She does exactly with us what she was done with her. Probably a bit less. Probably quite a bit less. But my interpretation is that my experience and the story that I told was the horrible beatings that she gave me for years. The terror of that. Okay? Justifiable resentment had nothing to do with me. And it's in my heart. When I made amends to her, I told her that I was deeply sorry for not being the kind of son that she wanted, for doing behaviors that elicited the violence. And I had a cordial relationship with her from then on. She came into Al-Anon. I was waiting for her to get to the ninth step. Now, along these lines, I've gone through all kinds of spiritual practice. I've done all kinds of forgiveness exercises, all that stuff. But the story is still present, and it is an impediment that I have. Now, also, you all know, you know, so everybody got their story? So just, you know, I'm sorry, I'm in Sweden. Okay. Everybody got their story. We all got one, right? So the story is, yeah, yeah. The story is we got three different versions of it, right? We got the 3-minute version, we got the extended 12-minute dance track, and then we got the box set that we can bring out when we really want to get to it, right? And this pops up all the time. And we do the steps, we go through the stuff, and yet the story is still there. And that story is in the past. And all my brain tries to do is to bring it into the present. Biochemically, every time that I told myself that story about my mother, my body went through it. My body, my beingness experienced it. And I beat myself. And I was responsible for every beating that happened to me in my consciousness after I was 12 years old and I left that house. And I did that to myself thousands of times. The minute I had a teacher tell me that I could take that story and just call it a story and get one instant of separation, that could start to grow. And I haven't even talked about that. Probably 5, maybe 7 years. The only reason I say it now is because there is a spiritual purpose to it. And the spiritual purpose is this. No matter what it is, no matter what your story is about what was done to you, it is in the past. And you do not have to live there anymore. And all you have to do is call it story. You can leave that story in this room tonight in the Serenity Prayer. Now, does that not mean it won't pop back into your head, 20 minutes after this or 2 hours after this or whatever? Well, that's fine. Spiritual growth is what we're talking about here. And so what happens is you may... It'll be the fifth disc of the box set, and you realize you're in the story. you don't listen to the sixth disc. Huge growth. That in itself, once that shred, once that truth walks through, you're free. You're a free woman. Now, does that mean that you don't have the physical stuff and do all that? Of course. And you deal with that in the day as you need to, as we need to, in order to take care of whatever. But what we do is we leave all that story behind and deal with whatever is in front of us at this moment, paying attention to this moment. What can I do? What can I? How can I be? It may take, like with me, the minute I had that awareness about that every beating that my mother had ever gave to me, I'd given to myself. It probably took a year and a half for it to fully wind through my understanding and become something that was that I was liberated from. But it would have taken, you know, lots and lots of therapy, you know, a couple decades and a lot of medication to deal with that. And all it took was one moment of awareness to just get that little bit of a separation. Why don't we just for a minute, is there anybody else got a question? Yes. What is my favorite thing about sobriety? The conscious awareness of the presence of God in my fellows, in any moment that I open to it. That is my favorite thing. From a recreational standpoint, my favorite thing about sobriety is watching a guy who I've sponsored or I sponsored his come and say that they heard their first fifth step. Because remember about this thing we call Alcoholics Anonymous, you do not have it until you have given it away. You have to give it away in order to get it. And to see the light come on in somebody else. There's a wonderful story about the Baal Shem Tov, and it's kind of long, so I'll leave it to you. To get the book, The Spirituality of Imperfection, by my buddy Ernie Kurtz. And there's a story about the Baal Shem Tov. And it's worth every penny. And for a number of years, I would read it with a sponsee before they did their fifth step. It's really, really good, solid stuff. But in it, the tagline is that your sins will be forgiven when a man comes to you and tells you your own story. And until you have had a woman or man sit before you and honestly tell you their story, you have no idea the forgiveness and the awareness and the power of the presence that's available for you, for fun and for free. Thank you.